Hey, My Mom's Basement listeners, you can find our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube, and Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly. They're just stupid boys making basement noise in the basement, noise in the basement. Just stupid boys making basement noise in the basement. Yeah, yeah. Just stupid boys making basement noise in the basement, noise in the basement. Just stupid boys making basement noise in the basement. Yeah, yeah.
Hello and welcome back to My Mom's Basement, ladies and gentlemen. It is Robbie Fox and I am here with one of my friends going way back. This guy has been in the podcast universe of wrestling since I was in diapers, pretty much, and pretty much gave me my start in the wrestling podcast industry in RBR Weekly Wrestling Talk. He does not host that show anymore. He just left that in the rearview window, and now he hosts Grapsity over on Fightful. Talk to me about that, Will. How's it going, and how are you?
I am great, and yeah, that's true. I left RBR a little over a month ago. It's almost been 2 months, I guess, which is weird because, yeah, I hosted that show since I was 18, so I hosted it for 16 years and 34, and it was like the longest stretch of my life. I can't believe my entire adult life I was hosting that show and all of a sudden don't. So it is weird to still talk about it in my rear view. Like, my Twitter handle is still WilliamRBR, and it's probably going to be forever because it's my gamer tag, all of that. But yeah, I host Grapsity now, which is on Fightful. It airs every Saturday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. I host that with Righteous Reg, who is famous for his Black Wrestling 500. He is also a contributor to Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And then I also host with Phil Lindsay. And Phil, he is such a journeyman in terms of just the things he's written and the places he's written. He currently writes for Bleacher Report.
Yep.
But yeah, the three of us.
He writes great stuff too.
He does write great stuff. And that was the whole idea behind Grapsity, was that it kind of came out of nowhere, in the sense that I had been doing RBR for a long time, but there was a place, and a lot of RBR listeners have kind of put it out to me that they could sense where my vision for what I wanted to talk about in pro wrestling was going. And because I had been bringing up a lot of Black issues and Black topics and a lot of those things on RBR, and I still felt like I needed the right platform for that. And for a short time, I started a podcast. I did it for, I think, 6 or 7 weeks, called Wrestling with Weekends. And I did that on Saturdays. And I want to say it was the second episode of Wrestling with Weekends, definitely the second, that I had Phil Lindsay on as a guest. And that episode did really, really well. Some of the best numbers I think RBR has ever done, and mainly because we covered the CM Punk debut on that one. But it did some great numbers. And so I was like, all right. And just the banter between me and Phil was so good. I was like, yeah, we got to do something with this. And then maybe like 3 or 4 weeks later, I had Reg on, and Reg was, we did a really great episode again, and Reg just has some of the best rants on the planet. When Reg gets in his bag, it's one of my favorite things. And we did a really good episode there, and that was one of my favorites. And some of the feedback was like, wow, that was like one of my favorite podcasts I've ever heard you do. And then at the end of the episode, Reg said, when I was, you know, you do the normal thing of, hey, I got to have you back on the show sometime. And he's like, yeah, sure. And then Reg chimes in with, yeah, maybe me, you, and Phil will do something one day. And that was the end of the episode.
A little spark.
Yeah. And that was where the light bulb hit. I was like, maybe we will. And like that following Monday, I went to Phil first and I was like, hey, Reg mentioned a thing at the end of the show, and I feel like we might have something here. And then I went to Reg afterward and I was like, Phil seems in, and I want to go off of what you said. I think the three of us should do something together. And we were like, okay. And then I was driving from the airport and the name Grapsity just hit me. And I said, that's our name. And then we were just going to do the show independently. And I thought, I think I have one more trick up my sleeve. And I reached out to Sean Ross Sapp and
SRS.
Yes. Yeah. That's shout out to Reg for that one. That's my fave.
It's
but
an
yeah,
clip from Grapsy.
But yeah, I reached out to Sean and I told him exactly what we wanted to do and kind of the topics we wanted to cover on Grapsy and how we felt like that conversation is kind of missing from a lot of the top wrestling media outlets, and that's what we wanted to do. And Sean was pretty much like, okay, you're in. And so Grapsy on Fightful was born. YouTube.com/Fightful is where that's hosted every week. And yeah, we have a lot of fun. It's so much fun. We had Andrew Thompson on this week. And this was, it's been a blast these last 7 weeks of doing that show. I can't get enough of it. It's so much fun.
That's awesome. I love seeing the clips on Twitter. The beans clip was the all-time one. The nothing beats the beans one.
Oh, my
the
God.
Wait a minute. When everyone's like, wait a minute, what?
And now it's so funny that that came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden Reg is now like the beans guy. And like everybody just like is always mentioning beans. Every time Reg is at a show, they're like, hey, you bring us the Boston Baked Beans. And it's so great. Yeah, I love it. Check it out.
That's great. And Fightful, I feel like, is the perfect home for it. Like the mesh between wrestling Twitter. I just did Denise's podcast, mm-hmm. and we talked about how like we're all in one big circle of wrestling Twitter, and it felt so like fitting when you were like, oh, Grapsy's going over to Fightful. I was like, oh yeah, that's fucking perfect.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, I've been acquainted with Sean for a while. We didn't really like get to know each other until this past summer when he came out to Denver, and then same thing, you know, got to know Denise, and then in joining Fightful, all of a sudden I just feel like Kate is just suddenly a friend, and then same with Hannah, and of course I've known Jeremy Lambert a while too, and then Joe Holbert, and all of a sudden I've done podcasts with those guys for a while, and it was a good fit, and I feel
it's like you like came
fit.
To AEW with all of your indie friends. You're like, oh, I remember you guys.
Exactly. Yes, and hey, that's what this show is, and I'm excited to talk about Full Gear.
Yeah, we are here to talk about Full Gear 2021. I feel like this is the rare AEW pay-per-view that you were not in attendance for. You're usually there.
Just about to say that. This is the first one I've watched from home in a while. Yeah. So like when everybody was talking about how they watched it on Bleacher Report, how the streaming experience was, I don't have any experience with that because I'm usually there. And yeah, this was the first one in a while since Revolution earlier this year because there wasn't a whole lot of attendance there. Yeah, and
The streaming was good for me. I watched the first one and a half matches of this show, like in the passenger seat of a car on my phone, and the streaming was pretty flawless for that. I got to shout it out.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I ended up because I had concerns over the fact that the Bleacher Report app isn't available in as many places as it should be, because you know it's available on I think the Amazon App Store. It's available on what is it? Roku and a couple of other places.
I couldn't get it on my... I came to my mom's and I couldn't get it on her smart TV. It's like a brand new smart TV. Could not get it on that. I had to watch it on the computer.
It's not available there. However, and again, I'm going to keep calling out Bleacher Report on this because you guys aren't paying me for this. However,
call them out as Barstool. They're an enemy.
I will say that as a software developer, I successfully ported the Bleacher Report app from Amazon to the Android TV platform, to Google TV, very easily. Literally, it's because they're basically like the same platform. They both run
APKs.
Like
coding? Did you have to get in on the code and shit?
I mean, there's one little piece of code to remove, which is the app. If you pull it from Amazon, because Amazon Fire and Android TV basically run the same platform, and you can really get the same apps to run between the two, but all Amazon apps have an Amazon verification checker that will just check to make sure you're running like an Amazon account, and literally it's like three lines of code and it just select and delete, and then all of a sudden you have the app. And I installed it on Android TV, and it works. It works very well. So I was able to do that, and the whole app, the whole show just streamed so clean. It looked good. I eventually just ran it off my Chromecast, though, and it looked good. And so, yeah, if you guys at Bleacher Report just want to toss me six figures, then I will go ahead and port that over for you. Or just take what I just said and literally do that and then throw it on
No,
me.
Don't do that. Don't tell them about that. Just give you the bag.
Just give me the money. Yeah, and I wasn't there, though, but by the end of the first match, I will tell you that I wished I was.
Of course.
I felt like, damn it, I should have been there.
The crowd was so hot for that MJF Darby Allin match. That was like, it had a main event vibe, like in the arena. It sounded like it from the from that. But before we get to that, I did want to point out, Trichy is our presenting sponsor, of course. They are the industry leader in Delta 8 THC products. If you like wrestling, you'll probably like Trichy, because Trichy really enhances the wrestling experience. It enhanced All Out for me. It enhances AEW and WWE shows week to week for me. Why? Because federally legal THC goes great with pro graphs, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. It gives you an amazing buzz and a great body feel, but with a much clearer head, less anxiety and paranoia that comes along with some different strains of weed. And it's available online at 3chi.com. That's the number 3chi.com. And at retailers around the country. I went to a smoke shop recently, saw 3chi everywhere. I felt like a proud dad. Must be 21 to purchase. And remember, this is not CBD. It is psychoactive. It will give you a buzz. So please use it responsibly. But if you go to 3chi.com right now, you'll shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, oils. They've got cereal treats, brownies, cookies, gummies. I think I said gummies already, but the gummies are so good, you got to say it twice. They've got root beer taffy now. They've got Delta 8 balls, which are kind of like Skittles. They're amazing. Try it all out. It's like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory of 3chi, of THC, of vapes, whatever you want to say. Use the promo code MMB. You'll receive 5% off your complete order. Now let's get back into the show. The pre-show match, which I didn't see, had your girl in it. Sheeta, Thunder Rosa defeated Jamie Hayter and Nyla Rose. You're a huge Sheeta fan, the biggest Sheeta fan on the planet, maybe.
Yes, I am.
What did you think about this? And where do you, if you had the book, what do you do next with Sheeta?
Okay, so there's a multi-parter to this. I think that this kind of seemed to telegraph to me that Sheeta's probably not going to advance beyond this Wednesday in the tournament. It does feel like Sheeta is basically going to continue the feud with Sarita Deeb, which has been excellent. Like, she's been having these crazy great one-on-one matches. They've been some of the best matches, I think, that some of the best women's matches this year on Dynamite.
Agreed.
And so I am all in on her continuing to do that. What's interesting is that, you know, Sheeta's basically been off TV since the since she lost the title at Double or Nothing earlier this year. And then she did an interview recently where she talked about how she took the time off. She requested to be removed from TV because she felt like she wasn't bringing enough to the table. And I thought that was interesting. And she talked about how in the time she's been off TV, she's been taking acting classes and things like that. Like, she thought she was, you know, she felt like she delivers in the ring, but she just felt like she needed to bring more promo wise to the table and more character development stuff. And I thought that was interesting.
I love to hear that. Yeah. From any wrestler.
You know, because a lot of people were complaining, saying, how could you take Sheeta off TV after she gave you a whole year as champion? And it was like, I have a feeling that's not the case. And sure enough, the fact was, like, she was requesting it. She was requesting that, you know, she just wanted to continue working dark to at least hone her her craft as a wrestler. But otherwise, she didn't want to be back on TV until she felt she was in a place to do so. And now she is, and, like, she has a crazy great storyline. And so as far as where she's going, I think that her and Serena Deeb can continue to be kind of a feud that has a lot more fire to it than she's ever gotten to show before. That it's not just a professional wrestler, I'm going to beat you kind of feud. Like, you know, I thought from the beginning when she faced Serena in that first match.
For the 50th win, right?
Where she went for the 50th.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had the two conflicting promos where they had the video of Sheeta basically saying, I just want to have a great match with Serena Deeb. And Serena Deeb's like, no, I'm going to you up. And like, you don't understand. And Sheeta comes out smiling and Serena comes out determined, but Serena ends up winning the match and destroying her knee. And then all of a sudden that lights the fire under Sheeta. And I was like, all of that feels intentional. And then when she did that promo, I thought, oh, okay. Now, or not the promo, when she did that interview, I thought, okay, now it all makes sense. This was all very intentional character work. So I do see her kind of moving out of the TNT tournament and having just a solid one-on-one feud with Serena. The rest of the match, though, I liked the fact that Jamie Hayter takes that crossbody so well.
It was all over Twitter the second it happened.
Yeah, and the thing is, so she's done it twice, right? Because she did it on Dynamite last week, and it's very clear that somebody was like, okay, you need to keep taking this crossbody. And we mentioned on the Fightful Post show that one of the best things they should do with it, because she takes it so well, is she needs to just Samoa Joe it. Like, one day, just have Thunder Rosa like go for the crossbody, and finally she just like walks off. And and like, I think that would be the best thing they could do with that, because of the fact that she takes it so well. But otherwise,
she takes it so well, but it looks so painful. Like, I get that's why she takes it so well. That's why why we're saying it's so well taken. But like, that has to hurt the shit out of both of them.
Yeah.
To knock the wind out of her, and Thunder Rosa barely has any like cushion to catch her because she's just going straight down.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then she's just like just flat on her back, and it's not like a catch and then fall. It's basically just like a jump and fall kind of thing. Yeah. I can't even imagine how much.
No, I'd sound like the grape lady if I took that. I'd be like, oh, please stop, please stop.
Yeah, all the props in the world to Jamie Hayter. And then, yeah, I love that Nyla Rose and Hikaru Shida have traded so many pinfall victories over their rivalry. I think off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure Nyla Rose holds 2 pinfall victories over Shida in tag matches, and Shida holds 3 pinfall victories over Nyla between their 2 singles matches and then this match here. So, like, there's always little cool stuff between those two. So it's pretty evenly matched. And I have a feeling that because they're 2 and 3, Nyla's probably going to win on Wednesday. We'll see. I've already, in predictions for this show, had plenty of egg on my face. So I don't know. I think my predictions were 6 of 10. So
I saw that tweet. Not bad. Not bad. You're still on the positive side. We got our opening match, which was MJF versus Darby Allin. I was surprised that this was the opener. I really didn't expect them to kick off with this. I kind of expected the Miro versus Bryan Danielson match.
I did too. Well, especially because last year, the tournament match kicked off the show.
And it is a nice, like, you kick off the number one contender and then you get the champion at the end of the night. It's like a good bookend thing. But I think it was the right call to go with this one, considering how hot they got the crowd and how into it they were. Like, I saw someone say, I forget who tweeted this, but someone in our wrestling Twitter circle said that feels like the pay-per-view main event that they should have in 3 years, but they just did it in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, and maybe sooner. Who knows? Because, like, MJF feels like he's there. And, you know,
that robe that he came out in, the purple, oh my God, that was fire.
You know, I'm going to steal a point from our friend Anthony Scatz, who said that MJF, when he, you know, he wrestles so rarely, right? He really only cuts promos. And, you know, it's to the point of where a lot of people think he's not a great wrestler. And that also seems like a by design thing, because if he wrestled very often, he'd win the fans over, like, completely, because this guy is good. He's so really good. And every time he goes out there and has a major match, people look up and go, damn, MJF is like better than I thought. And the fact that that keeps happening, and it happened again here, is a testament to him probably needing to remain an attraction wrestler like that. I think he should continue to have rare matches like this. But then Darby also came out and had, you know, Excalibur reminded us on commentary, but Darby Allin is kind of, he has an amateur background. He was a high school freestyle wrestler. People forget that about him because that's not really like a part of his character. That's not part of who he is. And then Darby Allin just goes out there, and with MJF, who's very much a student of the game, the two of them just have this crazy kind of Matt classic out there. And,
so good. Even the storytelling of it, not just the wrestling, the way MJF and Darby put stories together, put this match together, flawless. The finish of it was amazing. Like, yeah, and I was very like, who wins this match? Because does Darby lose twice in a row? Does MJF take this loss? What's going on? They're both kind of in need of a win. And then they did the finish, and I was like, no, I'm stupid. They're just going to continue this.
Well, you know, it was funny, too, because I guess one slight little flaw in the match is way throughout, and maybe this was just intentional by MJF, maybe it wasn't, but throughout like maybe the first like 5 minutes, MJF kept adjusting his tights, like something was bugging him in his tights. Yeah. And I thought, I wonder what's up there. Because like something is clearly bugging him with his tights, but I can't, and he just seems to keep messing with it. And then it's like, oh, there's something in his tights. And we learned that later on in the match. But there were some really cool spots in there. I just rewatched it like an hour ago because I didn't catch this the first time. But Darby, when he goes for the coffin drop to the outside, there is this loud scream from somebody in the like somebody obviously really close by who's just like frightened at the idea of Darby possibly not only hitting this coffin drop to the outside, but possibly missing. And like, yep, you could just hear the scream of fear. And then they replay it and you keep hearing the scream over. Like, go back and watch that. You'll hear this nightmarish scream from somebody in attendance.
It's like when Seth turned on the shield, you hear that guy like, no.
Yeah, it's such a good build to it because of the fact that it's like right as he's on the top rope, and there's just it's fantastic. But yeah, I enjoyed the match. I enjoyed, you know, the idea beforehand. MJF approaches Justin Roberts and tells him that, you know, he's going to beat Darby Allin, or he could beat Darby Allin with a side headlock. And that was a story throughout the match. They kept attempting the side headlock takeover. And
what a brilliant idea. I wonder who came up with that. If it was MJF himself, all the flowers in the world. That was amazing.
Absolutely. And like very little shenanigans as far as the match was concerned. You know, we got the other members of the Pinnacle making their way in, and then Sting ran them off. But for the most part, everything was just clean wrestling till the ending, which MJF,
very old school style as well. Yeah. You know, that's the MJF heel thing. Great matches, 22 minutes. I also expected this one going into the pay-per-view to get like 10 minutes. I thought this one would be one where they're like, all right, they'll go, because it is the beginning of the storyline. But like we said, they kind of went all out. Like, I'm sure that they have a little bit more locked in the tank, but this was a hell of a match.
Yeah, and you know, they I'm thinking like, where can this go next? And I feel like the place it probably should go next is I believe it's an inaugural thing. I mean, not inaugural, an annual thing, because they did it. They did the inaugural one in 2019, the MJF winning the Dynamite Diamond Ring.
Oh, yeah.
And then they did it again the second year, and he retained, basically. He got to win it the second year. So he probably should be like the runner. I mean, he probably should do it again. And I'm thinking runner-up should probably be Darby, and then they do Darby versus MJF for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. And if it were me, I'd have just, like, Darby beat him. And all of a sudden, the ring is, like, out of play, finally, after 2 years.
Yeah.
Darby
ain't wearing that shit.
Yeah, just, like, grab it and just, like, toss it.
Yeah.
And it's like,
launch it into the crowd, yeah.
Yeah, launch it into the crowd. I don't care about the Dynamite Diamond Ring. That's what I would do, personally. I think that'd be kind of cool. But, yeah, just a great match. And, yeah, with the ending with MJF tossing him the skateboard, which it was another thing where so first off, I do want to commend them for bringing back the Full Gear stage, because All Out used the Dynamite and Rampage stage, and a lot of people, including me, were a little disappointed, like, it's the same stage we see on TV. But they brought out like the full-on Full Gear stage that we saw 2 years ago with the gears and everything, and that's a cool looking stage.
I'm all for that too. Like, I'm all for the unique stages.
Yeah, I love the unique stage. But then when Darby's at the top of the ramp and he's got his skateboard, and I thought, oh, it's been a while since Darby skateboarded to the ring. That's cool. Didn't even consider when that happened that, oh, this is actually going to be a factor in the match later on. Didn't even think about it. I was just like, oh, Darby's got the skateboard again. And I love that part of his entrance. But yeah, MJF wants Darby to hit him with it. Darby's like, no, you're not going to break me. Gives it to the ref. And then that's when hits him with the Dynamite Diamond Ring. 1, 2, 3. And
it was actually, I heard it was an ode to an all-time classic, John Cena versus Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30. Yeah.
all-time, it was
an homage, yeah.
Yes.
guys, work attire has changed. The days of wearing uncomfortable business attire are over, especially if you work at home, if you work at a place like Barstool. I'm lucky enough where I can wear whatever I want, but what I choose to wear is Cuts Clothing. Cuts Clothing is the best in the business. This is a true story. I had to pack up some ornaments the other day, right? So I wanted to wrap them in t-shirts so they wouldn't break because I had to transport them from my mom's house to my apartment, right? My mom's basement, kind of breaking kayfabe there. I don't live in my mom's basement. But the point is, I wrapped them in Cuts Clothing because I said, they're not going to break in Cuts Clothing. That's an endorsement that I don't think they've ever gotten before. But this stuff is the softest clothing in my closet, the softest clothing I own. It is my travel attire. It's what I like to wear on an airplane because you like to be comfortable, especially if it's a long flight. If I'm going to Las Vegas for a UFC thing or something, this is what I put on. Cuts Clothing has the best stuff in the game because it's also versatile. You know, it's not like baggy clothing. It's not like it doesn't look nice. It looks very nice. This is a business casual. You could wear this on a date. You could wear it to the gym if you want, because like I said, it is so comfortable. Shipageddon 2021 is coming. In preparation, Cuts is starting their sale season early for you with 30% off site-wide starting November 9th, so you can have a worry-free shopping experience. Head over to cutsclothing.com today to get 30% off site-wide. This is a great deal. Promise you, great deal through December 3rd, and upgrade your wardrobe with their world famous shirts, joggers, and their all new outerwear. The sale is up December 3rd as well. That's the date of a Pup Punk show. So get your Cuts Clothing before then, and then show up to the Pup Punk show in your Cuts Clothing. That is cutsclothing.com, 30% off site wide. Next up, we had the Lucha Brothers defeating FTR. This was an 18-minute match. This one was good. I didn't love it. I don't know what it was. I just couldn't fully connect with this match. I mean, Phoenix did a lot of sweet spots. There's that gif of him dropping in from the clouds. That's like amazing. Yeah. It looks like he's joining in Strong Ass Abs. It looks like he's selecting a new character in Marvel versus Capcom.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like.
It was good. I don't know what it was about this one that I wasn't all in on.
So there were a couple of funny bits to me. The first one being when Dax Harwood goes for the Three Amigos, the Eddie Guerrero Three Amigos, and the crowd boos because, you know, he's a heel doing this. And then Penta then reverses, and then Excalibur's like, oh, now Penta's going to show us how it's done. And he, like, totally fails at it. Like, yep. They look awful. And I just thought, all right, like, for the moment, made sense. But, like, Dax did those, like, flawlessly. They looked way better.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I liked a lot of the match. There was something off about the ending. And until Tony Khan did those the post-show, I had no idea. So if you listened to me talk about this before, when we were talking about the finish was a little funny and, like, didn't really make a whole lot of sense. Like, how could you not know that that was Cash Wheeler under that mask? He looks nothing like Dax Harwood. They have entirely different bodies. He has hair coming out of the mask. You know he's not the legal man. But apparently, according to Tony Khan, he said that Dax Harwood got rocked. And that's also why he didn't run down with Cash later in the show, is my guess. When Cash ran down during the Cody match, it was just Cash Wheeler. There was no Dax Harwood.
I didn't even think about it when it was just the one. Yeah.
Yeah. That apparently Dax may, he mentioned that Dax got rocked. It said that, you know, he just, thunked his head.
Maybe a stinger, like, maybe a concussion, hopefully best, but
yeah. And so when he said that, I thought, okay, now the ending might make a little more sense. Cause I figured there should have been more shenanigans with that ending. It shouldn't have just been like a, you just pinned the wrong guy and it's over kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that was just it. And we just moved on.
I wonder what spot he got rocked on.
I'm curious because I tried to rewatch it and I couldn't tell what it was. But
might be one of those weird things where it's like a normal bump and boom, you get a stinger. It's like people talk about that all the time. I just had Janella on the podcast and I said, what's the most painful bump you've ever taken? You've taken some of the most insane bumps ever. And he's like, none of the big ones. He's like, probably something stupid, normal bump.
And that's like, usually how it happens, right? Like, most people's, like, major career injuries, other than the one that just happened in NXT 2.0. But, like, most people's, like, major career injuries, like, didn't happen on like major spots or anything.
Look
it
at the just... Shawn Michaels like back injury is like the weirdest. Like he kind of clips the coffin on the way out.
Yeah. Or like think about Hunter's quad injury. He was just going for like, he was just clubbing Chris Jericho from behind and tears his quad. Like that's
that thing was ready to pop off the bone though.
Yeah. And, but then like Vince too, like Vince tears both quads just like getting in the ring. Yeah. And so, a lot of people's major injuries don't seem to happen that way, but yeah, the match itself, like I said, it was cool. It was exciting.
A bit long. And I thought that was maybe an issue like throughout the show. I thought there were a couple matches that were too long.
There were times throughout the show where I'm like, okay, let's move on. Otherwise, Lucha Bros retained. The only thing I like truly wasn't a fan of was the ending. I like the spot with Rey Fénix where he does the stomp onto the package pile driver, but then he jumped off and then over onto Dax Harwood. I thought that was really sweet. Yeah, yeah, that was a very cool spot.
Up next, we had Bryan Danielson versus Miro. This was one of the matches I was looking forward to the most just because of how good Bryan Danielson's run has been. Obviously, he's my guy. This one, I like
my guy too, by the way.
Yeah, your guy too. Your favorite wrestler of all time.
Favorite wrestler of all time, yes. Yeah. Love Bryan Danielson.
This was my least favorite match he had in AEW, though. I will say that. I was surprised by it because I was really looking forward to it. I've loved all of his matches, like, to a ridiculous level, especially the big ones, the Suzukis, the Omega. Those I've rewatched 5 times each already. I just can't get enough. This one, I liked the story they were telling, and I liked it more from the commentators telling us what story they were telling than the story itself. Like the, oh my God, Brian's just so worn out. You know, can he work this crazy schedule and continue winning matches and all of that? I loved. I loved the finish. I loved a couple spots out of it. This was another one though, where it was 20 minutes and I felt like this could have been 10. And I felt like you could have got everything in here. I don't know what it was. Another question for you. Do you like Brian's theme?
I wish they would run it with the lyrics.
So do I. I think that would make it way better.
He came out with it one time with the lyrics, and I don't know when that night they decided they didn't like it because it was literally like at a Rampage Dynamite taping. Yeah. And so on the Dynamite.
Not at the Rampage.
Yeah, he came out with the lyrics at Dynamite, and then somebody must have made the call later on, like, actually, no, because like he wrestles later on in Rampage that same night, and he didn't have the lyrics. And I was like, what? Why? Like, I like it with the lyrics. I will say it grew
that's
on me.
That's the part of the theme that I like, is like the chant, you're going to get your fucking head kicked in. That's awesome that they integrated that. There's just something that my brain cannot put Bryan Danielson and trap drums beat together. Yep. Like, what is going on there?
I will say it's grown on me. It was not my favorite at All Out. And
felt a little anticlimactic at All Out.
Yeah, at All Out, that's exactly how it felt. And then I don't know. The more
it's grown
I hear
on me a little,
the
I
more,
agree,
yeah.
Just,
the more I hear it, the more I'm like, fine. I've even rewatched the ending to All Out, and all of a sudden I'm like, actually, I can live with this. This is
If the crowd got in on the chant, it would make it a billion times better. But like, none of the crowds are getting in on the chant.
No, they just yes with it. And I will say, in this match, Bryan very much got into like, kind of screw your request mode, because like he kind of starts like egging on the yes a little bit. One thing that was pointed out was that Miro in this match had his thigh taped. Mm-hmm. And it didn't seem to be something that – and I think that was an injury he got in the match with Sammy Guevara.
A real injury?
I think so, yeah. And that he's just kind of been nursing it. I think that's why he was off TV. And, you know, they were – kind of keeping him at bay because he was just cutting promos and whatnot. He wasn't wrestling, and he wasn't originally supposed to even work this show. Moxley was going to work
Moxley thing, yeah.
Yeah, and so I did notice that this wasn't like the type of injury that Bryan was targeting. As a matter of fact, they were avoiding that leg altogether. And so I wonder if that did slow this match down, that we didn't quite get. I still think this was one of Miro's like best matches. Like, if you weigh it as like the matches Bryan's had, kind of on the lower end. But if you weigh it on the matches that Miro's had, it's like, actually, this is like top three. And so
it's pretty good. I like the Eddie Kingston match a hell of a lot better, though.
Yes, that was a great match. And after I rewatched this today, I agree that the Eddie Kingston. But again, that was Miro at 100%. I think with the taped thigh, I think And them seeming to avoid it the whole match.
There's a better story in the Eddie match, too. I was more invested in that one. The redeemed mm-hmm. he's nuts, the way Eddie just came to the ring like a man possessed. I loved all that.
Yeah, and then we chanted redeemed he's nuts.
I know, yeah, it was a great chant. Yeah. Great chant.
But yeah, and at the end of the day, though, Bryan Danielson is the number one contender.
And how long is it going to be until they make that match? Because that's a tricky match to make.
It seems like they're going, like, he's, what, scheduled to face Evil Uno, who's, of course, tied to Hangman. Seems like they're kind of moving full speed ahead on that.
But what do you do in that match? That's such a tricky match to book. You're not going to put the title on Bryan Danielson right after Hangman got it. But how do you have him lose? Do you have someone run in and Bryan's going to start a feud with them afterwards?
Honestly, I think the best thing you do for Hangman, beat him.
Have him be the first one to beat Bryan?
I think he should be.
I hate that, actually.
Because I think that, you know, with Hangman, with Bryan and Kenny being essentially deadlocked at who's the best between those two, mm-hmm. but Hangman could beat both, I think that's good. Is the best way to put over a solid babyface.
That's why I got Will on the show. He's got the better brain for this shit than me.
But the funny thing was, it's funny that Tony Khan and I think alike a lot in a lot of ways because when people were
he's got
giving
a fan's
their,
brain, that's part of
he
it.
He does, yeah. But when people were giving their predictions on this match, a lot of people had picked Miro, and I was like, "Nah, it's Danielson." And I said, "And I think the reason it needs to be Danielson," and I said this on Grapsody, was that I thought Danielson needs to win this in order to cast doubt on the main event. Because you have Danielson who wants his return match with Kenny. And so, therefore, if Bryan wins, then all of a sudden, is it Kenny and Bryan next? What's going to happen? And the funny thing was, that was exactly what Tony Khan said he was going for in the press conference after the show in the media scrum. He literally said, he was like, I wanted to cast doubt. I wanted you having it in your brain the entire time that whoever wins this match is facing Bryan. And right now, the match that everybody wants is Kenny and Bryan 2. So then Kenny's supposed to win then. And like, I knew it. I knew that's what they were going for. Bryan.
And if you had Bryan lose, like you said, if you had Bryan face Hangman, Bryan loses, and then you kind of point out the fact that Hangman can beat them both, that sort of automatically sets up the Bryan Kenny 2.
Yes,
like in that, hey, we both lost to this guy. Now what do we do? All right, there's nobody else in our way except each other. So let's go for this. So that's a pretty good fantasy booking schedule you laid out there.
Oh, this is how I dream.
The next match, Christian and the Jurassic Express defeated the Super Click in a Falls Count Anywhere match. I love Falls Count Anywhere matches. I tweeted this in real time. One of my favorite tropes in wrestling is when you got a street fighter, a Falls Count Anywhere match, and you come out in jeans. Reminds me right away of Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam 02. Like, yes. I come right back to that. I'm like, yeah, that was fucking awesome. So I loved all of that about this. This was a very fun match. This is the kind of match that they should have on every pay-per-view. Just it's such a different step away. And it doesn't need to be a Falls Count Anywhere match. Just something fun where it's a ladder match or a gimmick match. Another one where I felt like he could have shaved some time off of it. Once he got to the ramp, then it was like, all right, we're going for a lot here. This is like the finale of episode one where it's like, you got four storylines going. I only care about the one of them. but yeah, fun. Ultimately, too long, maybe. A little too much tried. But I didn't really have any issues with this because the spots made up for it.
Yeah, I wonder, and I'm sure the news will come out eventually as to who was behind this match. My spider sense tells me that it's Jerry Lynn because he, like, just thinking about the classics he's already done in AEW, this one just seemed to fit his mold. And I'm curious because I've kind of like been putting together this mental thread of like the Jerry Lynn classics, because he did the lights out match with with Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa. He also did the parking lot street fight with
Best Friends
and Santana and Ortiz, and he did the Young Bucks and Butcher and the Blade in that big schmoz, and Moxley and Kenta versus, or Moxley and Lance Archer
Kingston.
Versus
Archer
versus Kenta and Kenny. And like, he's good at that. He's good at this kind of like figuring out how to use more than just the ring and
It's what he was good at when he's a wrestler too. It's funny to see that translate.
So that's why I'm curious. I bet you he's the guy behind this match. Something
you're probably
tells
right
me.
About that.
And if I'm wrong, then props to whoever else was behind this. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, this match had a story that I wasn't looking for the first time, and then I just recently went back and watched it for this show. I literally said I just watched it right beforehand. And the story throughout this match was kind of the growth of Jungle Boy, as
Jungle
joked
Man.
Before. Yes, especially because he's got the beard now, right?
Yeah,
and like
seeing
him in the beard and jeans, and all of a sudden he... but like, you know, throughout the match, there's a couple of story threads of like... them attempting the concerto on Adam Cole and Christian trying to get him to do it. And he's a little hesitant. And because he hesitates, that allows them to, the Bucks to stop it from happening. And then later in the match, as Christian's about to attempt the concerto on Matt Jackson, and Jungle Boy says, "I'm ready." And then he does it. And that's the victory. 1, 2, 3.
That was good.
But you know, they set us up for some solid near falls. They did the knee pad spot with the...
Yeah, I thought that was it for sure.
Yeah, they had the thumbtacks with the knee pads, the knee pads with the thumbtacks, I mean, and they hit Luchasaurus with it. Crowd thought that was it, that was over.
The Panama Sunrise was a big spot, too.
Panama Sunrise
set.
Off the stage. Yeah, and the funny thing about that being the ending is I think people would have pretty much been like, you know, okay, that was solid.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've had a few minutes here. We're good. And after that, you mean to tell me that after that, Luchasaurus hits a shooting star off the stage after that spot?
Yeah, true.
And, like, it was crazy. But
dinosaurs recover fast.
Yes, they do. Maybe not. I think like 65 million years from them not recovering.
But, who knows? That maybe.
So I do agree that I think the match went on a little bit longer than I would have liked. I think that they had so many smart spots in this match that there's a few that weren't really necessary. I do think that doing the thumbtacks in the mouth spot has been done already.
I've seen enough of that.
Yeah, and we've seen it recently. We just saw it with Britt Baker and Abaddon just like 2 weeks ago on the Halloween show. And we also saw it with the, Eddie Kingston and Pentel Cero Miedo versus the Young Bucks. We saw that. What was that at? What was the name of that show? Because I was there. And that's the part I'm pissed about. Road Rager in July. But anyway, we've seen that, and so.
And I don't mean to be a pussy about this, but like that could just go wrong too easily. It's not worth it. It's never worth it because it doesn't really look cool. When you put it in, the crowd will chant "you sick fucker" or whatever. But when you hit the super kick, it's like a normal super kick, and then they spit out the thumbtacks, and like none of us even see that. So like the idea of you swallowing a thumbtack and slicing up your
I know, it's like
I don't need to think about that. I don't need to be concerned about that.
Yeah, if that spot gets put away for a while, I'm good. That was probably my big flaw with this show is I saw a lot of guys repeat some stuff. And I feel like
the same thing that everyone doing Eddie tributes was very nice, but we didn't need an Eddie tribute in every single match on the show. And they have the whiteboard backstage that says like suicide dives, fucking this match, table spot, this match. Somebody needed for that date to put like Eddie Guerrero spots. And then,
I got it because this was, it was the anniversary of Eddie's death. And then also, this was the arena that, the super show, which was supposed to be the show where they blew up the lowrider and like all the stuff was supposed to happen with Eddie. And instead Eddie died that morning. And then it ended up being where they taped that Raw and SmackDown. That was the arena. And there were guys who were present at both.
By the time we got to Jericho doing it, it was like, listen, this is very nice. I know he was one of your best friends, but we've seen 7 Eddie Guerrero tributes on the show thus far. And you've been going for 20 minutes.
Though was that biting spots. A lot.
Yeah.
There was a few people who did biting spots on this show, and
that's a fairly recent thing in wrestling. That becoming like a popular thing. I don't know where that came from. Everyone's biting each other now.
Yeah, and I thought we saw it one too many times on this show. Like honestly, like have conversations, guys. Like, hey, if you did a biting spot, no more biting spots on the show. Like it's really like Moxley. I feel like was the one who kind of brought it into the kind of mainstream wrestling scene. And now
the
I'm
poison the water.
I feel like a few people are doing that. And yeah,
does Kingston
cool
do it now too? I think Kingston bites.
He did it. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure Darby did, or somebody did. But like, regardless, stop. I'm cool. like I said, I felt like I saw that too many times throughout the show.
Next up, we had Cody and Pac versus Malakai Black and Andrade. Cody and Pac got the win here, 16 minutes. This was a good match. I wasn't necessarily like dying to see this going in. It was one of those where I was like, all right, that'll be okay on the show. And it was okay on the show. Nothing out of this world. Nothing bad, I thought. Was what it was.
Yeah, you know, it was weird because I felt like this match needed to happen only because all four of these guys missed the last pay-per-view and like for incidental reasons, right? Because like Andrade shouldn't have missed the last pay-per-view, but Pac had the travel delay that prevented him from getting in literally by a day. And that was enough to prevent him from getting in, and that caused that match to get pulled from All Out. And then, of course, Malakai was feuding with Cody at the time, who was filming Go Big Show. So those two had to miss the last show. So at that point, there were the four of those guys missed the last pay-per-view, and you almost couldn't afford to have them miss this one. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was...
It didn't take up too much time.
It didn't take up too much time. I mean, the match really did center around the... and really, it's just WWE who's like killed this for me. But the moment that Excalibur said the words, "Can they coexist?" my stomach dropped because I'm like,
ugh. The tagging and, each other in to start. Yeah, and I thought,
yeah, and I was like, you know what? I have to look at this through an AEW lens, because through the AEW lens, they haven't done this like at all. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that it's been happening so much. Literally, it is the premise of Survivor Series coming up this weekend. Yep. And there's so many like, can they coexist stories going that I groaned initially, and then I was like, no. Review this as an AEW show. Talk about this as an AEW show without putting anything else up against it. I was fine with it.
How do you feel about Cody? Where do you fall on Cody?
Cody is in a weird position.
You one of those fans that's booing when you're at live shows? Boo!
Nah,
fuck Cody.
Like yeah, I don't hate Cody. I don't necessarily love Cody. I will say I do love Brandy, and I do think that Brandy is way more in on her heat than people think
she is. I promise you, she is. She is.
Oh, she absolutely is. People don't realize she comes out of the heel tunnel. She's the like when Cody comes out through the middle, she doesn't enter from the right side. She enters on the left. She knows what side she's entering on.
She mentioned it on Roads to the Top. I know that's half a kayfabe show, but like Cody is trying to push her in that show, one of the storylines, in the direction of like, I think the fans are going to love you. They're going to want this comeback story of you're coming back after a pregnancy and work your way to the top and all that. And Brandy keeps saying, no, they want to hate me. Just let them hate me.
Yeah. It's like she's aware. She's very aware. But as far as Cody's concerned, you know, the running gag of the Codyverse is one thing that I do agree is kind of a problem. And this was the first match in a long time where I felt like it didn't exist. And that Cody, for pretty much since last year's Full Gear, when the Shaq feud started, has felt like he's on an island. It feels like everything Cody's been doing is not a part of the AEW anything. He has felt so detached from the rest of the show. And... like I said, it started with the Shaq feud, really, because the Shaq feud, actually, I liked. And I liked the Shaq match.
I was there for that match, by the way, and I accidentally did, like, a non-kayfabe thing. I didn't realize, because we were backstage, I didn't see the spot where they did, like, Shaq's being loaded into the ambulance, and then he's weirdly not in the ambulance. He vanished out of the ambulance, like the Undertaker. But I didn't realize that had happened. So Shaq walked past me right after that match, literally right after. And I was waiting, because we were the next segment, that little, like, press conference thing.
And the one where your mic didn't work.
Mic didn't work. Brutal. Botchamania. I literally got on Botchamania. Yes. But Jericho did send me a nice DM afterwards where he was like, sorry, we buried your mic. I was like, all right. That was worth the Jericho DM. But Shaq walks right past me, and he made eye contact with me. And I'm just like, oh, my God, you know, basically breaking my neck looking up at Shaq. And I just went, good shit. And he said, I know. And then he walked past me. And I was like, that was my favorite thing that's ever happened. So I tweeted that exchange. I was like, I just told Shaq good shit. He just said, I know, and kept it moving. And then everyone's like, you're breaking kayfabe from the show. He disappeared from the ambulance. So that I had to delete that. But I had to tell that story because that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, that rules.
And I also saw I saw Colton Gunn earlier in the show with a chair, just walking around backstage with a steel chair. And I was like, what's that for? You about to turn on someone off camera here? And he's like, you'll see. And then later in that night, him and Austin are hitting Shaq with a fucking steel chair.
Yep. but yeah, like, as far as I'm concerned, like, as far as Cody's concerned, I've just felt like he hasn't really been a part of anything. The QT Marshall feud really felt like that was just going on in an entirely different galaxy than the rest of AEW. And yeah, for the first time, and I think Pac helped. Because Pac is such a like AEW mainstay. He was literally in the world title match at Double or Nothing. That finally it has felt like Cody is back in AEW.
Yeah.
And
it's a good way to put it, because I have a cousin who's a huge AEW fan, goes to live shows, all this, and he always says to me, why do people hate Cody? And I don't really have an answer for him. I'm like, there's like, I don't know, people feel like his stuff is maybe WWE-esque. Maybe they don't like the celebrity involvement. They don't like what he's... But I never have, like, a concrete answer. And the next time he says to me, why do people not like Cody? That's what I'm going to tell him. I'm going to be like, I think people feel like his stuff is disconnected from AEW. Because I like Cody's stuff. I liked... People shit on him for beating Malakai on Dynamite. I liked that match, and I was fine with him beating Malakai and not dropping three in a row to him. So, like, I'm definitely a defender. But when you said that, I was like, oh, no, but that is kind of true. His stuff feels disconnected.
It does. It very much feels disconnected. I apologize, folks, for who are looking at me, because this is the third podcast this has happened on. But I am surrounded by cats right now. You've probably seen them in the background.
Yeah,
you've seen them in the background, and they've decided to...
How many cats do you have?
I have two.
What are their names?
Lucifer and... what is the other one?
Blanking on your cat's name?
I know. Well, they're new cats. We've literally got them. So... Lily.
All right, that's a good name.
Yes, Lily, Lucy, and Lily. But it's
I like that. It's two girls, Lucifer, or no, one boy.
Yeah, no, two girls. So, but either way, and like one is like scratching at my feet. Ow! These are cats who.
That's a cute cat.
They're two cute cats.
Do you know which one's which? Are they both black?
One's got a white belly, and the other doesn't. And so, yeah. That one is Lily. But yeah, so my cats, during the Fightful podcast, one of them knocked over the camera. Just like, and I saw it coming too, because I'm like, oh no, they're tugging at the cord. And I'm like, I know what's about to happen. And all of a sudden, my camera just collapses. And I thought, oh, and we're live. And I'm like, I'm just apologizing for cats. And I'm sorry, I have cats.
No, it's all right. I got a dog right outside this room. So if the door wasn't open, it'd be the same thing happening over here.
Yeah, I got to remember, like, before I start podcasts, like, shoo them out. And then, and like I said, people have probably seen them, like, walking by in the background.
Saw them walking behind. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
I have two cats, and I've only had them probably like 3-4 weeks now. Hasn't been very long. So,
you a cat guy growing up, or was just this just like the kids want cats?
It was more so we just recently had to rehome our dogs. We had two dogs, and our cat died last year. My wife has always been a cat person. I didn't become a cat person until I married, or until we started dating. And I grew attached to her cat. And then we had a cat last year, and he just died last Christmas. And so when we had to rehome the dogs, the kids were really sad about that.
Of course.
It was like, okay, well, we'll let you have we'll go back to cats. We'll go back to having cats. And we did.
They love the cats?
Yes, they do.
All right, good.
I like have to tell my kids like very often, like, put them down. Like, they want to walk every once in a while. They're babies. They're maybe just a few months old. But yes, I have cats. And I have cats that don't know my podcasting life the way my cats have.
They're not as respectful of the podcast.
There was one, I have a ring light right here that likes to just like hop through it. And so like if you see
that's
my lighting
cool trick.
Change every once in a while. But then like also there's a window right here and the blinds are closed, but there's obviously this dangling string. And if you know cats, that's what they like. And so Life with cats.
That was the cat hour on Ollie. That was a little intermission, a little cat talk.
Little intermission.
Now we have the AEW Women's Championship match, which Britt Baker successfully defended. Another very good match, I thought. Britt Baker very rarely disappoints. She's my favorite women's wrestler on the planet right now. I'm very into her whole character, her whole title reign right now. I'm a big fan of. So this is 15 minutes, thoroughly enjoyable for me.
I like the match. I do feel like Britt Baker is suffering a bit from, I called it previously, Roman Reigns syndrome, which is where you have a slate of opponents that people don't really buy are credible challengers.
True.
And
there was never a second from the moment this was booked to the moment she got the three count or she got the finish that I thought Conti had a second.
Yeah.
Like a second where she could win.
And I feel like a truly, especially when you're talking about a heel reign, like a truly good quality heel reign is one where people buy the victories of the opponents, right? Like, you know, one of the like all time great, like dominant world title reigns is probably, was that his fourth? Triple H's third title reign. And that was the
Which
one where he,
are we talking here?
That was the one where he retired Foley.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because, you know, the people talk about that the street fight and Madison Square Garden, you brought back Cactus Jack. People bought that Cactus Jack could beat Hunter in that match, and then he lost. And then the following month, it was like Foley's career is on the line. Oh, Foley's not retiring. He's totally going to beat Hunter. And then he lost, and it was like, then all of a sudden, there's so much more heat on Hunter. And it's like, oh, but Hunter's going to lose at WrestleMania to The Rock, right? And then he won there. And it's like, when you have those title matches where people believe that the opponent could win and then doesn't, that's where you get that good heat on somebody. And I feel like Britt's been missing that because at no point do I feel when she's in these scenarios that she's going to lose. And I feel like this match kind of suffered from that and that they going into it as it started, I don't feel like anybody was really buying that. You know, they're like, oh, it's just another title defense for Britt Baker.
Yep.
You know, let's get through this. And then, luckily, I think Ty is such a quality performer that as the match went on, the crowd got into her. And I think the crowd was starting to buy a lot of Ty's near falls and near finishes. And the fact that Britt did not win with Lockjaw this time around, she won with kind of a flash small package win. It wasn't really a small package, but either way, it was a roll-up type win. The fact that she won that way, I think, spoke to the quality of the match, and that while the feuds haven't really been conducive to making you believe Britt's going to lose, I do think some of her matches have been, because I do think that the Statlander match did that as well.
The Orange Cassidy moment, right, where he's firing her up, get back in the ring, come on, he's all like going crazy.
That was great.
Like and that, you're like, oh my God, Orange Cassidy's fired up? Like maybe this is the time.
Right, and I feel like the matches have done that, and I would like to see from Britt's reign more peril for her reign. I want maybe at some point,
which
for
makes
her,
it's a little tricky with the tournament going on now too. It's like, who do
so
you pull from that
up.
Tournament? Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people are tied up right now. Like what do you even do next? Because so many people are tied up.
Who's the next challenger? Who do you think?
Well, if we go back to earlier, you know, one thing we haven't gotten, have we? No, we've gotten a four-way. I don't know if we've ever seen a three-way match for the AEW Women's World Championship. And if that's the case, maybe to prolong the feud a little bit longer, throw Britt in with Shida and Deeb, and then all of a sudden...
That'd be good stuff.
All of a sudden, you could do a three-way and kind of tie that up there, you know, have a really great match.
It makes sense that you and Tony are aligned, because he's a smart guy.
And then have Britt, like, escape with the title, but then that's where then you continue Deeb and Sheeta. That's what until you eventually finally get
I'm gonna DM fucking Tony Khan right now. Give this guy the book.
Hey, he follows me on Twitter too. I could DM him as well. He DM'd me a happy birthday, by the way. I appreciate that. Shout out to Tony Khan.
You know what? He DM'd me a happy birthday as well this past summer. And I was watching, it was like, I think my birthday was on a Friday and I had missed Dynamite and I was watching Dynamite and I was a bit, podcast sponsors 3G, bit stoned. And when Tony Khan DM'd me, I felt like I was dreaming. I was like, I'm watching Dynamite right now. Why the fuck did Tony Khan just DM me? Does he know I'm watching Dynamite? He didn't know I was watching Dynamite. Great guy, though. Such a great guy.
He is.
All right. One of my favorite sponsors of all time is back. That's right. America's number one meal kit. It's HelloFresh. I know the holidays are hectic. They always are. But HelloFresh helps keep things simple with recipes and ingredients that cut out grocery shopping and limit meal prep time so you can spend more of the festive season with friends and family. I talk about HelloFresh all the time because I actually get HelloFresh. This stuff comes in amazing pre-packaged bags. So you have everything you need in one little bag. Throw that in the fridge or wherever you may put it. You know, the ingredients, some you put on the counter, some you put in the fridge. And you make this stuff so easily. It comes with a little instructional. Reminds me of like a Lego booklet when you're a kid. When you read through a little Lego booklet, it's that easy, but actually easier because it's only one sheet. It's not a booklet. Just one piece of paper tells you everything you need to do. And the meals are extraordinary. They're amazing. They're the greatest thing you've ever tasted. I'm not exaggerating. HelloFresh has restaurant quality meal for a fraction of the cost. This is the best in the game, and I'm getting you an amazing deal here on My Mom's Basement. Go to HelloFresh.com/14Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E, that's how you spell it, R-O-B-B-I-E, for up to 14 free meals and 3 free gifts. What are the gifts? Ooh, I don't know. You're going to have to order HelloFresh with the new promo code to find out. All right, let's get back into the show. Up next, my favorite match on the show by a long shot, CM Punk versus Eddie Kingston. This was tremendous. From the start, the energy that this had, CM Punk in the shorts, bringing back the shorts. I loved the shorts. Thought that was awesome. The spinning back fist to start it off. Punk's sell of that, acting like he was completely knocked out, giving me flashbacks to his UFC days. That was amazing. And then the match itself was balls to the wall. Like, I just was at UFC 268 at the Garden. We saw Justin Gaethje versus Michael Chandler. Everyone calling it one of the greatest fights ever, one of the greatest first rounds ever. That's what this wrestling match felt like. It was just like, I'm beating the shit out of you. You're beating the shit out of me. We're going until someone drops. And then eventually Eddie Kingston was the one to drop. CM Punk beat him with the go to sleep. Tremendous. Absolutely awesome. My favorite CM Punk match since his return. And another match that just shows you what an asset Eddie Kingston is to this company.
I know, right? And this felt like a fight. It felt like a fight. There were some potatoes in there, and they looked good. There's just so much good to say.
11 you know, minutes, I, too. How crazy is that? This felt like a minutes. War, and it was the shortest match on the show.
I know. It was shorter, but one of the things CM Punk talked about in the media scrum was he mentioned how he knows how to read the room, and he very much does, because he was asked about the crowd reactions, and he's like, you know, he's like, I may have been gone 7 years, but I'm not new to this. Like, I'm not stupid. I can see where crowds are going with things. I can see how people see the parallels between CM Punk, Voice of the Voiceless 10 years ago, Eddie Kingston, Voice of the Voiceless now. And if that's the case, then I guess I'm John Cena. And he played that up with the shoulder tackle. He did the shuffle. Yeah, he did the fire.
This is amazing. Yeah, I popped so hard for that. And my girlfriend's next to me, like, you don't understand what he's doing right now.
Yeah, and like I said, he read the room well. He knew exactly how people were perceiving this, and he ran with it. And he got the victory over Eddie Kingston, but it wasn't in a way that I think either guy necessarily looked bad. And like Eddie Kingston,
Eddie could have won this match.
He could have. And you know, I've talked about this before, but one of the things that I loved about this feud is, have you ever had somebody who wronged you, but then went on and became a changed person, and and everybody sees them as a good person now, but you still have that just little feeling in your gut of, yeah, I understand, but you still need some receipts because you don't get to change. And that was one of my favorite lines Eddie Kingston said, that you don't get to change until I say you do. Yeah. I don't care if you're a changed man. we're not past this yet. And I, because that's real. That's real shit. If you ever had somebody wronged you at work or anything like that.
So much of this promo felt real. Like, all of the promos back and forth between them were so good because they felt so real. You were like, there were moments where I was like, I bet Eddie Kingston still has a chip on his shoulder about that fucking ROH incident. Like, I bet this is kind of real.
Yeah. And like I said, it felt good. It felt real. And then by the end, it was a short match. But sometimes the cool thing about wrestling matches is that they're full of content, and sometimes if all the content you have is 11 minutes worth of stuff, then you know what, give me 11 minutes worth and just go. Don't stall me out, don't sit there to rest.
None of that, like, in this match.
You don't have to do that. Just go until you're done. And they did this, and I loved it. You are correct, this was excellent. I loved it.
The blood that CM Punk had, did he blade or was that a blood packet?
I think he bladed. I think that was color.
It looked so weirdly smeared that I was like, did he just rub a blood packet on himself? Did he blade? I didn't know what he did.
The weird thing is, though, you almost forget how much of CM Punk's WWE run took place in PG era. Because, what, they went PG 2008 and CM Punk debuted in WWE 2006. And so, like, the second I saw blood on his face, I was immediately thinking, this is actually, like, refreshing for CM Punk. And, like, something we haven't seen out of CM Punk, like, on a mainstream level.
Yeah, true.
Like, really? Ever?
And it was, if he nice did really see. Blade, I wonder when, like, the last time he had bladed was.
Yeah.
It must have been his first time blading in a fucking decade.
Like, right. And so that's what I loved about that, was I just thought that was the first time I've seen CM Punk bleed.
The shots of him after the show looked great. Some people got amazing shots in backstage with the kind of dried up blood where I'm like, okay, put that on a poster immediately, because that's like an iconic looking shot. And I loved the shorts. He brought back, like, the shorts kind of from the indie days. They weren't knee length like the basketball shorts he used to wear, but they were Chicago inspired, and I was kind of like, that might be the new look for CM Punk. Like, I like CM trunks and everything, but if you're trying to reinvent yourself, the shorts look better than the long boys, and I like the long boys.
Yeah, everybody's been trying to figure out, is it the long boys, is it the shorts, is it the trunks? But
maybe,
like,
it's all three. He goes back and forth constantly, and you never know.
Well, now we're at a fourth. This was the fourth look he's had.
You're right.
So I kind of like this one, and it was different, and it was good. I loved it.
An announcement. I believe this announcement was here. It was either here after the next match, but Jay Lethal is All Elite. Tony Schiavone comes out on the stage. He announces Jay Lethal. He's in the company, and he challenges Sammy for the title. Sammy, that's going to happen on Wednesday. Couple things on this. Jay Lethal has a ton of allegations against him that I was completely oblivious to until they announced him in AEW. That was the first that I had heard of that, and it stunned me. So I was like, whoa, and stunned on the level of, I'm surprised these exist, and I'm surprised that they would hire him knowing these exist, because of kind of how AEW has operated thus far with a couple other talents that they've had that have gotten the boot after allegations came. Another thing, why do they keep doing this where they announce Sammy's challenger? Why can't it just be a John Cena-style open challenge? Would get a cooler pop, I think, the Bobby Fish one, the Jay Lethal one. Why not just have Sammy go out there and be like, give me someone? And then we get someone from another world. We're like, oh, my God, I didn't even know they were coming in.
People forget.
A couple things on that, yeah.
That's how Eddie Kingston debuted.
Kingston
debut wasn't
announced.
No
music. He just came out, like, cutting a promo on Cody. Yeah, it was awesome.
And there was no announcement on that. That was literally the only hint we got. And Maxwell Baumbach picked up on the hint. Because I didn't, which was John Moxley had originally said, hey, there's a really cool surprise coming on Dynamite this week. You guys are really going to love it. And Maxwell's immediately like, oh, Eddie Kingston's coming to Dynamite. And I'm like, how do you get that out of that? And he's like, well, he's got a relationship with John Moxley. And that seems like something John Moxley would be into. And I was like, okay, whatever. And sure enough,
one of the best
debuts
the company's ever had still, I think.
Yeah. On the Jay Lethal front, I've been aware of this pretty much forever.
Yeah, apparently these allegations are very out there. I knew, so his former manager, Truth Martini, also had allegations.
Yes.
And maybe I kind of just put them all one in the same. Maybe I'm telling on myself here for being disconnected with wrestling Twitter, but I genuinely had no idea. I tweeted shout out New Jersey. And then I was like, oh no, maybe not shout out New Jersey.
Well, so there's a lot of people, because here's the thing. There's a lot of people who aren't in wrestling Twitter, the wrestling Twitter world. Good example of that. If you go to the Facebook comments versus the Twitter comments on the Jay Lethal announcement, night and day, completely different world.
All positive.
Nobody on Facebook is aware of this at all.
Yeah.
It's like, and not a single person. I didn't see a single person on Facebook bringing this up. As far as, you know, when people were asking about Ring of Honor, we had talked about it on Grapsity, who AEW should pick up. You know, there's a lot of names out there. And
Danhausen.
And I don't know if that happens, although he's got a relationship with literally everybody.
I don't know if it happens either. That's just what I want to happen.
Yeah.
Give me all the Danhausen in the world. That guy deserves all the money in the world.
But there's been a lot of questions as far as, like, who gets picked up. And then somebody in our chat brought up Jay Lethal, and I was immediately like, oh, no way. There's too much baggage with him. I don't think he gets picked up. So for him to be the first name picked up,
crazy.
I thought, like, that threw me off. You know what else threw me off? Tony Schiavone saying, when he goes to introduce him, and he's like, we're going to introduce this young talent. And I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, somebody young, right? And then he's like,
a veteran of the business for 20 years.
Like, ladies and gentlemen, Jay Lethal. And I'm like, young.
Like, there's a lot of adjectives you could use to describe Jay Lethal. That ain't one of them.
Right. And like, I'm 34, so like it's not like I'm like trying to old shame, but Jay Lethal's 36. He has been around a long time. As a matter of fact, literally him coming out to his theme song "Stompin' Circumstance" is literally a reference to his
old
is that black.
What it's called? That's a pretty good name for it. I'll give him that. Good name.
It's literally a reference to his old black machismo gimmick, which was 06, 07? Like,
that was when I first heard of him. I remember seeing his action figure in the store, and he had the basically Macho Man tights on. I was like,
right.
This guy's just Macho Man?
Yeah,
and
it is.
Checked out TNA, and I was like, all right, this guy's fucking Macho Man. Kind of like it.
That was it. I don't know. I can't really...
It's tough. The allegations are obviously not, like, substantiated, or they are just that as of yet, so it's hard to say, this guy never deserves a job ever again, but it's also hard to hire him knowing they're out there.
Yeah, and I don't know how much went into that process, because, you know, Jay Lethal said the whole thing came together in, like, 3 days, that he was, like, 3 days ago. I wasn't sure what my
future was. Was Tony like me? Did Tony not know?
there's no way. That guy has his ear to the ground so much that there's not a single thing that Tony Khan is not aware of, as far as conversations in all sides of wrestling, Twitter,
also,
wrestling
this
media.
This is probably awkward with him and Punk in the locker room together, right? I mean, Punk's wife dated, you know, Jay Lethal when she was pretty young and left him out of her book very purposely. And I don't know what that situation's like, but... That's between Jay Lethal and Colt Cabana. That's some locker room for CM Punk to walk into every day.
That whole locker room is like so odd because of the fact that there's a lot of like rivalries that we thought may still exist, but then all of a sudden people are cool. Like, remember, you know, the fact that Leo Rush and Mark Henry were announced at the exact same show, and that was apparently the show where they squashed it. So who knows? Maybe AEW plays Peacemaker. I don't fucking know. But I do.
Tony's a nice enough guy to do that. You get Tony in a room with two guys. He's like, oh, this is great. Why isn't this great? This is amazing. Isn't it amazing? Let's fucking go.
So I don't know. Jay Lethal isn't exactly somebody I would have signed.
Also, like, just take everything away. I don't know if I would have signed Jay Lethal as a wrestler in 2021.
Yeah,
he's a fine wrestler, but he's not something that AEW doesn't have yet. You know, like, they've got plenty of people that have his in-ring skill, and he's not such a good promo where you're like, we need him for his fucking promo skills. He basically fudged the line on this. He was like, I'm going to challenge Sammy. Well, not tonight. I wanted to do it tonight, but not tonight because we're in a suit and he had a match. So I'll do it. It's like, just fucking challenge him on Wednesday. Stop with all that bullshit, Jay Lethal.
Yeah, and like, you know, because he was one of the names brought up when, you know, one of the conversations that gets had a lot, especially around Grapsity, is black talent in AEW. And that, you know, AEW has signed a lot of black talent on the development end, in that, you know, they brought in Red Velvet and they signed Top Flight, and you know, Sean Dean is there and he's working the recruitment role as far as he brings in. Sean Dean is what the person who coordinates all of the indie talent that comes in for like Dark and stuff like that. But then you have Powerhouse Hobbs, and they did a lot of signing over the last year. But those are guys that are kind of needing a little bit more development to get to that top level. So there's always been a conversation of like, who's going to be that like major black talent that they sign that's almost like ready made. And like, you know, of course, Keith Lee is that guy now, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, if you don't sign Keith Lee, you have
you're crazy.
Yeah,
you're out of your mind.
Right. That's like put your money where your mouth is. Like you have to sign Keith Lee.
Yeah.
But then like whenever Jay Lethal would come up, even when Jay Lethal would come up, people would go, like Jonathan Gresham is one like signed tomorrow, right? Shane Taylor,
tomorrow.
Like that, you know, that is one absolutely signed. Jay Lethal's not really one I was asking for, but at the
Gresham
same time,
should have been signed before Lethal. He should have been like maybe the first ROH talent signed and put him against Bryan Danielson, and then the world is going to see that. Oh my God, this guy is a fucking superstar.
That said, Jonathan
the
Gresham.
The WWE superstar. Just a superstar.
Jonathan Gresham, of course, he's still advertised for Ring of Honor
Final
shows
Battle
through the end of the year.
Whatever,
he's advertised for Final Battle. So, like, he's one I would say absolutely go for. I'm curious to see what you get out of Jay Lethal. It's wait and see. I'll wait and see as far as the Sammy match is concerned. As far as the allegations are concerned, I have tried my best to not be kind of a judge and jury on things because like I don't know
it's so tricky with this
I will say that I like Taylor Hendricks a lot. Mm-hmm. And I've met Taylor Hendricks numerous times over the years, and so she's not somebody who I would just immediately cast out on either.
No.
This is one of those ones where I just kind of have to back off. And it's like, to steal a line from my pal Cameron Hawkins, Seahawk. He once made the point that sometimes you don't have to have a take on everything.
Yeah,
like sometimes, like everybody.
Such a great point. I wish more people knew that, especially on wrestling Twitter.
And that was the thing he said, because sometimes it is okay to just back off and go, I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about this.
Yeah, that's where I am too.
How I feel about this one. I don't know. Definitely that the day he said that, that has been like wisdom I've taken to heart of you know what? You don't have to have a take on everything sometimes.
Don't have to have a take on everything, people.
you
could just sit one out and be like, you know what? I'll let everyone else argue over that one.
Yeah, and that's where I am on this one, because I don't know.
I think the match will be good. He's a good wrestler. We all know that for sure. So I think the match with Sammy will be good, and we'll take it from there. Up next, we had, in my opinion, my least favorite match on the show. This was the Inner Circle versus the Men of the Year and American Top Team. I obviously enjoy the MMA wrestling crossover as a big UFC fan, as a fan of Junior Dos Santos and stuff like this, but he was fine. Like the MMA fighters were fine. I don't care for the storyline anymore, I think. Like, I didn't care for seeing Dan Lambert in there. Didn't care for any of the Inner Circle stuff. Like, I like Jericho. I just don't care for the Inner Circle anymore. So the fact that this went 20 minutes and it went on when it did right before the main event, I was like, oh my God, people, wrap it up. It's 11:30 right now.
That's where I was at. I'm like checking my watch, like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
I was hoping with this being in the spot it was in, I was like, oh, remember when at All Out they did Paul White versus QT Marshall? It was three minutes.
Yeah.
It went before the main event. It was just kind of like a match just to kind of...
That's what it should have been. Five minutes.
I thought, okay, just do a bunch of plunder, have Dan Lambert get his ass kicked, and then we're done. And no, this went on for what felt like forever. I spent a lot of this match on my phone just kind of Googling like, hey, that's not from Minneapolis. Because, like, the idea of a Minneapolis street fight, because that was the other thing I had a problem with, was that you just did a false count anywhere match on this show, and this is a lot of the same. And so I'm like, what are you really doing differently that match didn't do? And, of course, the stipulation here being a Minneapolis street fight. What is a Minneapolis street fight? It's
apparently
a street fight
where they have to hold the tag ropes, right?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck was that? They're following tag team rules, but it's a street fight?
Apparently, this was a street fight.
I've seen some street fights in my day on the internet, in person even. I never see anyone on the fucking sidewalk being like, tag me in, bro! That ain't what street fights are.
Just somebody like holding onto a shoelace. They're like, I gotta hold a tag rope.
Yeah, what? Let go. Fucking help me.
But yeah, this match, apparently the stip was that all of the weapons used were things invented in Minneapolis. And I thought, all right, that can't be true. And some of it was. I mentioned on the Fightful podcast, that or the Fightful Post show that apparently, yeah, the toaster is an invention of Minneapolis. And
Tony Schiavone marked out for that toaster. He loved that. Yeah, he had a crazy voice, went up 10 pitches when he said that. He's like, a toaster.
Yeah. And then they brought out the print symbol.
The print sign was nice.
Yeah.
Because... I liked the, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but I tweeted, I love the show going off the air with the Dark Order in the ring and the entire arena lit up purple. I was like, oh my God, this is so perfect.
And the crowd chanted purple rain when they saw the print symbol. But otherwise, yeah, this went on too long.
So long. This was like the fucking Ambrose Asylum match. I was there for that one, and I was just sitting there like, oh my God. I'm gonna have a child by the time this is over.
When you have a main event people want to see, and you are the only thing
dying to see.
And then, like, this is one of those, like, read the room kind of things. If you have a main event people want to see, and you are the only thing preventing people from seeing that main event, maybe don't go 20 minutes.
Don't go 20 minutes, yeah.
It was too long.
10 max. This should have been 10 max. The fact that this was double the time of Kingston and Punk, look what they accomplished in that match, and look what they accomplished in this match. I don't remember what they accomplished in this match, because I don't remember the match.
I watched
the whole thing. I don't even really remember.
Sammy Guevara had a couple of cool spots, but other than that.
The Dan Lambert thing, he got stapled in the nuts. What a dumb spot that was.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
And the worst thing is, they kept teasing the stuff I want to see in this match, which is they've been teasing for months Scorpio Sky and Sammy Guevara. Mm-hmm. And, like, they got to open and do some cool stuff. And every time those two are together, it's like, man, I can't wait till these two go one-on-one. And I have a feeling that when they do, I think they're going to pull the trigger on the title change. I think Scorpio's the next champ.
I would like that.
And
I think Scorpio's way ready for that.
Yeah, I think that's the only reason they've held off on doing it is because, like, they did Sammy and Ethan Page and all of that, and I think they want Sammy to have a few more successful retentions before putting the belt on somebody else. That said, stop. This is over. It has to be over. Santana Ortiz, do something else.
The inner circle needs to go their separate ways. I don't care if they break up. I don't care if they friendly. You know, we're going our separate ways.
And the hard thing is they did. As a matter of fact, when they made their entrance and the...
For the Jericho MJF, by the end of that, the inner circle is barely on his side.
Right, and like the Chiron Reed's first time the inner circle has teamed since Double or Nothing this year. And I thought, hasn't been long enough. And, like, you know, they had that promo back, I think it was just at the end of October when they were in Miami. And it was supposed to be the first time the inner circle's all been together in months. And I thought, hasn't felt long enough.
No.
Like, the fact that you're like, the inner circle is back. And I thought, it hasn't even felt like Guz gone anywhere. I need to miss this team if you want to do kind of an inner circle nostalgia run. Because it hasn't been long enough at all.
No, and I like pretty much everyone in the inner circle.
I do too.
Hager,
pretty much.
Take him or leave him. Everyone
Four
else.
Out of five.
Yeah, everyone else.
And Chris Jericho blocked me on Twitter. He
blocked me a while ago as well, but he unblocked me when the whole thing happened. He blocked me because remember when Big E tweeted that he looks like the cool dad that lets you into his liquor cabinet?
Uh-huh.
I quote tweeted that. I said, you must not delete your account, Chris Jericho. Blocked. Fair enough. That was like 2012, 2013.
I mean, I love Righteous Reg. His constant go-to is the block by Jericho, baby. and so that bit is so good. And because honestly, it's almost, and the weird thing is I don't tag Jericho in anything. So because I have a thing against tagging wrestlers if I have a negative opinion.
Same.
I really only do it if, and you know what, backstory on this. Do you know what made me realize that I needed to start doing that? It was one day in 2014, I was sitting next to Maria Kanellis, and it was the time I had hosted RBR.
Oh, yeah.
And
then, I remember.
And yeah, she was sitting right next to me, right? And like right before we start the show, she opens up her phone and hits her notifications. And the amount of shit people think they can just say to real people because they're famous pro wrestlers was like mind blowing to me. And I was just like, you know what? I don't want to be one of those people.
Yeah,
I could never be one of those people. Yeah. And I'm like, because she's a real person and she very much could see it. Yes, she is, that you definitely do get the verified tab, so you do have at least the benefit of that. But other than that, like just seeing that it's real people, I'm like, you know what? Never. Not me. Yeah. I'm not going to be that guy. Unless I'm looking for a response. That's the only reason I would ever tag somebody is if I'm looking for a response. Of course. That is my advice to you, anybody who is on wrestling Twitter or any other platform where you can tag people. Just remember they're real people. They can see it. And
they probably will see it. That's the other thing. It's like, I know you maybe send this out into, it's a void, whatever. They're probably going to see it. I know a lot of wrestlers check their notifications. And like you said, a lot of wrestlers even will like look up their name. Let's see what people are saying about my match. Wrestlers get out of the ring and they're excited about it. And they click on it and read, 100 negative things. That's only going to kill people's love of the business. And you're only going to add to that. So I couldn't sign off on that anymore. Don't add to that. Don't be one of those people. If you want to tweet something negative, fine. Don't tag them. They don't need to see that shit.
They don't need to. And that's the thing is like, if they're going to search and look it up, then that's fine. You didn't necessarily throw it out to them. They kind of sought it.
But
fine.
Like, would you walk up to them, at a meet and greet and be like, your character's horrendous. The booking's bad. Like, you wouldn't say this stuff to them in person. So it's like, not like, they would beat you up in person. You just wouldn't do that because it's a dick thing to do. So it's just kind of follow that method of, would I say this to them if I ran into them on the street? No, maybe don't say it to them on Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's it. For me, it's just I would never tag anybody that I wasn't looking for a response from. And the only time I do that is if it's like, hey, great match.
Of course. Yeah, tag them and all that. They would love to see that, I promise you.
Exactly.
Speaking of great matches, the main event here, Hangman Adam Page, finally, this long, long, long storyline has come to a big culmination here at Full Gear 2021. And Hangman Adam Page has defeated Kenny Omega for the AEW World Championship. I feel very confident and comfortable, not even saying this is recency bias, and saying this is one of my favorite long-term storylines I've ever seen in my days of watching wrestling. Like, the fact that we were able to follow this from where it started, and we got all the way here, and all of the little story threads, all of the little obstacles that were thrown in the way that made it seem like, oh my God, are they really going to get to that? Are they, oh my God, they signed CM Punk, they signed Bryan Danielson. What about Hangman Adam Page? Is he still going to come back? All this, the fact that it went off, everyone went home happy. It's exactly what everyone wanted. The crowd was going ape shit. The fact that Kenny Omega's gotten booed as much as he has is so impressive. Because like in the modern age of if you're a great wrestler, fans are going to cheer for you. Yeah. Arguably the greatest wrestler is getting booed night in and night out because he's doing such a good job with his character work. Don Callis is doing such a great job. Hangman is doing such a great job. Everyone that was involved in this storyline, thank you for giving it to us because it was fucking amazing. This match, amazing, 25 minutes. I saw our friend Maxwell tweeted the thing with the Young Bucks at the end didn't really land for him. I agree with that. Didn't really land for me completely. I like what they were going for. Didn't really take away from the finish for me. I just would have been fine without the Bucks coming out. I would have liked to see Hangman kick out of the One-Winged Angel, but after seeing the match, I'm like, all right, it's nice that they saved that. That's a future thing that someone's going to do down the line. It's going to be a moment. He definitely didn't need it. It just would have been a nice added layer. I like that he performed the One-Winged Angel, and he did it like mirrored to Kenny, so it was a little different. Kenny's the first one to kick out of it, the stolen finisher version of it. What did you think about this main event? Because honestly, I feel like I pretty much couldn't have liked it anymore.
It wasn't what I was expecting, but I think I've now watched it 3 times. Watching it those few times made me realize, sorry, I just heard something fall over.
Was it the cats?
There's nobody else in this house right now. My kids are at school. My wife took her brother to the mountains. So there's nobody else
Better
here.
Be
so
cats.
My cats are knocking stuff over, or somebody's breaking in my house right now. I guess we'll find out. But this match wasn't necessarily what I was expecting because the last time these two wrestled, they just had like a straight up Kenny Omega style wrestling match. And initially, I was thinking, we'll do that again, just more of that, because that's mostly what we got with Brian. But this match was more of a Kenny Omega character match. And that wasn't necessarily what I was putting down on paper as what I was expecting. But when I walked away from it, I realized, and watching it the other 2 times, I realized this is what that character of Kenny needed. This was, You know, Kenny had been using underhanded tactics and using Don Callis and using the Young Bucks to hold on to the title as long as he has. And essentially, this was now the match where he tried all of that, but at the end of the day, Hangman overcame it. And yeah. So watching it the other two times, I realized I like it as much for that. And I did like it. I liked the story of this match. And I liked that... I even thought the ref bump was smart.
The ref bump was great. The way it was executed, too, the way he pulled him in front is really well done.
The ref bump was smart because it also made a... This whole feud is just full of callbacks. Everything about the Young Bucks and Kenny and Hangman, even their tag match, everything has been full of callbacks.
It's like fan service, basically.
Right. And one thing that I had been noticing, because I'm just weird and I analyze things like that. For those who don't know me, Robbie knows me. For those who don't know me, I'm very stupidly analytical about pro wrestling, and I love looking for little things. And I, for whatever reason, my brain is just constantly asking questions that nobody could possibly be thinking about.
If right? I have a question about wrestling, I'll usually DM it to Will. He's usually wrestling encyclopedia for me. Yeah.
Yes. He's
my personal Google.
Yeah. You've used me for interviews. Before you've had interviews, you're like, hey, is this like correct? And so either way, it's a little behind the scenes of my mom's basement here. But as far as one of the little things I had been thinking about, and I can't believe I'm about to admit this is something I was thinking about, but I popped as a result. I thought to myself, when is the last time that Aubrey Edwards has called an AEW World title match? And I went back, and it's been a long time. Because it's usually...
Because she's like almost like their main ref, I feel like.
Yeah, and Paul Turner's usually been calling him. She did call the one in Impact. I'm not going to count that for this sake. Yeah. But otherwise, most of the year, it's been Paul Turner. It's been Bryce Remsburg has called him. And it's been... Rick Knox, but we really haven't seen Aubrey like calling these matches, right? Like, and my brain was like, is there like a beef with her and Kenny or something? But like, no, they host, they do all the AEW game stuff together. Not a chance. But I'm like, for whatever reason, Aubrey has been away from these matches. And so it popped me thinking about having that like buried in my head as long as it's been buried there. And then when she hits the ring and I'm like, Aubrey Edwards in a world title match. It's been so long. And she makes
and
her
the crowd
down.
Didn't know all of those analytics that you did, but they popped like they did. They were excited to see Aubrey.
And then when Hangman hit the buckshot lariat and hits the 1-2-3, and then I see Aubrey, you know, she does the 1-2-3 and points. Immediately, my brain goes to the visual of the first AEW world title match, which was Hangman Adam Page versus Chris Jericho. Yeah. Hangman on the mat with Jericho getting the victory. Aubrey Edwards was the referee for that match, and she's pointing with Hangman down on the ground. And I thought, you could put those shots side by side.
Someone should. That'd be awesome.
And so there were little things like that that I enjoyed here. But the match as a whole, I just had a lot of fun with, and it gets more fun with subsequent watches. And this was the moment Hangman
needed. Yeah, you don't have any doubt in your mind, like, Hangman's going to do this. Like, when you rewatch it, you're like, all right, yeah, it's a happy ending. It's like I'm rewatching Return of the Jedi right now.
Right, exactly. although, I would say the doubt in my mind was from the ref bump. All of a sudden, there's a little bit of doubt cast of like, well, we're here. Maybe not. I actually did like the Young Bucks thing only because of, again, I just...
It's a good callback, yeah.
I'm a nut for callbacks because, look, man, I watch Marvel movies, all right? They're my favorite thing in the world, and there's nothing I enjoy more than something that I remember from a previous movie and being rewarded for remembering that, and
it's
then...
The best. The whole of the MCU is like better than the movies themselves because you get those moments where you're like, oh my God, they fucking brought that back. Are you kidding me? You turn to your friend and you're like, oh my God.
And so the idea that Hangman Adam Page at All Out 2019 had asked the Young Bucks to be in his corner and they wouldn't and he lost. And they came out here to be, we weren't sure what they were coming out here to do. And then they gave Hangman the nod. right before he hits a buckshot lariat. And it was a buckshot lariat that wasn't even, that was just like the exclamation point. He had already hit the previous one. He had already hit the previous one, and this was just like a one more for good measure.
Put him down, yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't like he needed the Bucks' approval to win, but just having it there was like the ultimate seal of approval from this everything that's been going on for the last 2 years.
And where are they going from there with Kenny and the Bucks now?
Yeah, right? Because
super interesting.
There's little things that, like, Adam Cole tweeted. He tweeted a picture of him and the Bucks, and he said the best trio in all of pro wrestling, except there's another trio, which is the Bucks and Kenny. So, like, there's a little bit going on there, and there's so much you can do here. There's so much you could do going forward.
It's one of the main things I love about AEW is I feel like WWE a lot of the time, after pay-per-view, you're like, all right, they'll do that. They'll go here next. This person's obviously next. AEW, I legit, there's so many storylines across this whole show where I'm like, yeah, I don't really know what they're going to do with that person next.
I don't know either.
Unpredictability is so fun.
And I love it because there's, and it's unpredictability in the sense that there's options, right? Because everything, the funny thing is AEW relies so much on callbacks that I start thinking back to like, okay, what callback can we make next? Because now I'm like, okay, Double or Nothing 2019, had Bret Hart presenting the AEW world title and unveiling it to the world. And then Hangman Adam Page came out, and then MJF interrupted, and he talked trash on Bret Hart and Hangman Adam Page over the AEW world title. And Double or Nothing is supposed to return to Las Vegas this year at the MGM Grand. So what if the main event of Double or Nothing 2022 is Hangman Adam Page versus MJF for the world title, that same belt that they were both in the ring vying over? That there's so much
bring
you can
Bret
do.
Bret Hart back. Have him present it at the end
bring
of the match.
Bret Hart
back.
Yeah. There's a lot you can do there. And so there's a
I'm
lot.
I'm surprised
that
they haven't brought Bret back, to be honest.
I mean,
that's one of the few things that surprises me. Like, they're doing the Owen Cup. He'll be back.
I wonder if he'll be involved
with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's maybe where we see him. But either way, there's a lot of stuff, and I'm just happy. I was happy with that ending. And the coolest little shot there was, so my son pointed out, because Revolution and Full Gear use the same stage. They both have the little Videotron in the, they have the video ramp. And when Hangman came out at Revolution 2020, his middle Tron, was basically the same as it is now, except it was beer. It started with beer, and it started at, like, the bottom of the ramp, and it filled up the ramp and then went up through the center Tron. And Billy pointed out that wasn't there this time. He was like, it's the same Tron, but Billy's like, but the beer's gone.
He is your son.
And I thought, yeah, he is my son, right? And so when that happened, I thought about that, and I thought, there's no beer involvement here at all. And sure enough, when the Dark Order comes out after the match ends, and they go to hand Hangman a beer, and Hangman grabs the beer and throws it, and then hugs the Dark Order. I think the story there was supposed to be, and it goes back to, I know the exact match, right? It was Butcher and the Blade and the Lucha Bros versus the Elite. They had that match in, I want to say, like, February of 2020, and it was probably in Austin, Texas. But anyway, they had that match, and the Elite lost. And Matt walked up to Hangman, and he's like, he said, you know, I was going to ask you what your problem is, but I already know, because he tells him it's his drinks. And it was like, that's always kind of been the underlying issue, that Hangman is known for his fun-loving, having drinks, partying, but at the same time, it kind of held him back. And for the first time, he was focused, and when he won, he didn't.
He didn't need it.
He didn't want it. He tossed it, and instead just hugged the Dark
Order. Is going to give him a 30-day chip.
Days. And they hoisted him on their shoulders, and
great
happy
shot
ending.
To end the show. Yeah, so great. Like I said, the purple for Prince, for Minneapolis, all of that for the Dark Order. It was like you couldn't ask for a more. It was like a painting. You could make the Rocky ending when it like freeze frames into a painting. Like you could do that with this, and that's what a lot of AEW shows do. That's why I love this company so much. That's why Will loves this company so much and goes to so many pay-per-views, because they send you home happy. They actually care about that.
Yeah, I love just going home happy, satisfied. Yeah. I honestly, at the end of the show, I was like, I wish I could have figured that out. And I like figured out a way to make that happen. But regardless, it was a great show. Another great show, yeah. It ran long, definitely. And at the same time, on one end, I'm like, these shows are 4 hours. But on the other end, I'm like, they only do four a year.
Yeah.
And if you don't get it done on this show, your next opportunity is not till February. And we're way off from that. And so I guess this is what you have to do. You have to do it. And
a lot of the matches ran long, but like by the end of the night, I wasn't like, oh my God, I can't believe I watched that whole show. You know, it was like in the moment, you're like, this match is running a bit long. But afterwards, like 4 hours for a wrestling show, it's an hour longer than Raw. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And not bad. And so I'm happy. I wonder what does end up happening. Because, what, January 8th, they have the Battle of the Belt special.
Yep.
That's happening on TNT, and they're doing four of those a year. So that kind of opens you up to, like, eight pay-per-views a year, in a sense, or at least eight special events.
I didn't realize they were doing four of those a year. That seems like a lot.
Yeah, well, and they're doing four of them a year, so all of a sudden now...
Oh, yeah, because that's when they're going to TNT. Yeah, I forgot about
that. Yeah, because they're moving off of TBS, and so, or they're moving off of TNT and onto TBS. And yeah. So they're doing the four specials once a year on TNT.
I do love that they do that, though. Like, the Dynamite special edition episodes mm-hmm. are, like, one of my favorite things the company does. Yeah, it makes TV feel important, feel special.
Exactly. But I do wonder what they're going to do, if that's going to kind of open up the pay-per-view schedule a little bit. And it's like, well, now there's not so much urgency to get everything on a pay-per-view card because now we have eight opportunities a year to do these things. So, I don't know. But I know those aren't going to be 4 hours. I think Meltzer said they're only going to be two, or they're only going to be one. If it's only one,
you're gonna get two matches maybe.
Yeah, so if you do it as two, I think that probably would be better. But yeah, we'll see.
That was AEW Full Gear 2021. This was a blast. We'll have to do this again. I know that's the thing we just said, you do that at the end of every podcast, but we've done so many podcasts together that we really should do this more often.
Should absolutely.
Will, thank you very much for joining me. Tell the people where they could find Grapsity, where they could find you on Twitter.
So you can find Grapsity. Grapsity is Grapsity Pod. That's GrapsodyPod. Follow Grapsity Pod on Twitter. I am William RBR. That's also my Instagram. Literally all of my accounts are William RBR. If you want to add me on Xbox Live, I'm William RBR. That's
Your Twitter says Will Washington now, and I'm like, I know him as William R. Washington. Where did that R go?
You know what? Honestly, that was just a case of like, Will Washington was... actually, you know what? This is an exclusive for my mom's basement. You want to know where Will Washington came from?
Yeah. So
I happened to be at my parents' house recently, and I found, look at this. It says 2001, A Columbia Odyssey. This is my eighth grade yearbook.
Oh, right? Yeah, the Odyssey books.
And so I had scrolled through my eighth grade yearbook, and all of a sudden I find, and I had braids at this time, right? So, let's see, my eighth grade yearbook. And I see this guy right here, right? And it said Will Washington. It says Will Washington. That's me. And look at the shirt I'm wearing. That's a Triple H shirt. That's the That's the I Am the Game t-shirt that he had back in 2000. That's how long this has been a thing for me. Way long. It's been my whole life. But anyway, I saw that and I was like, Will Washington is like kind of catchy. And why did I abandon that? Like, that was my name through middle school and like the first part of high school, and then for whatever reason you know what it is, my best friend Carolina, she whenever she like has to she wants to reprimand me for something, she always goes William R. Washington, and like that has been a thing, and so it's just that became the name I ran with. But I realized that's how I saw Will Washington, I'm like, I'm gonna do that for a little while. And that's been it for me. Yes, and so that's it. No more palindrome of WRW. I am Will Washington.
And
that is me
going
forward.
If you're listening to this show and in the future, anytime in the future, you have a question about wrestling, tweet it to Will. He knows the answer.
Yes. That's what
he's
I
got
do.
You covered. He's got
yeah,
you covered.
That's what I do. And definitely check out Grapsity, though. It's on every Saturday, youtube.com/Fightful. And we're on every Saturday.
You can watch live, right? You could tune in, you live, put stuff in the chat, join the show, stuff like that. Yeah.
Send us super chats, humper chats, all that stuff. And it's great. We're live noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. And that's youtube.com/Fightful. It's also on my, because we use StreamYard, just like everybody else does. So like it streams to everything. But specifically, youtube.com/Fightful.
Everyone check it out. Will, thank you for joining me. This has been the My Mom's Basement edition of Full Gear 2021.